WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The murderous regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria has been toppled and Islamist-led rebels are in control after a mere two-week-long offensive. From the White House, President Biden said Syria is a better place without Assad in control.
This regime brutalized and tortured and killed literally hundreds of thousands of innocent Syrians. The fall of the regime is a fundamental act of justice.
From the Syria-Turkey border, CBS's Imtiaz Tayyab says the rapid collapse of the brutal regime has taken many by surprise.
Scenes like this would have been unthinkable just 1 week ago. Syrian rebels in the heart of Damascus celebrating the fall of the regime. As people wept for joy in the streets, shouting freedom.
Assad and his family fled the capital as the rebels were closing in. Russia has now granted them asylum. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg in Moscow says the Russian government is already moving on from Assad.
Even though Moscow had supported Bashar al-Assad for 9 years and had sent him all this military assistance to shore him up and keep him in power for the last 9 years, now that he has been toppled, Russia trying to find a dialogue with the new leadership in Syria.
On CBS's Face the Nation, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Turner said the U.S. could have taken action against Assad years ago.
This has been an incredibly brutal civil war with hundreds of thousands of people dying, including the use of chemical weapons, and of course reminding people that the Obama administration had said this would be a red line, that we would use military force to stop the use of chemical weapons, then failing to do so.
President-elect Donald Trump is still angry with the members of the January 6th committee who investigated the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. He wants them prosecuted.
Cheney was behind it, well, and so was Benny Thompson and everybody on that committee. For what they did, honestly, they should go to jail.
On NBC, Trump said he intends to pardon those imprisoned for their actions on January 6th, on his first day back in office. At least 80 police departments around the country are searching for the person who killed a healthcare CEO in Manhattan on Wednesday. But CBS's Anna Schechter says so far, no sign of the shooter.
We know that investigators, even divers, searched the lake in Central Park in an effort to find the gun that he used. Those efforts so far have not been fruitful.
Taylor Swift's nearly two-year-long record-setting Eras International Tour ends tonight in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. She performed a total of 149 concerts. It's the highest-grossing concert tour of all time. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. More than 500,000 Wisconsinites are unpaid family caregivers. They're the backbone of our long-term care system. And AARP says the state could be doing more to support them. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Family caregivers often go without vital support, even as they provide an estimated 538 million hours of care to loved ones each year, according to AARP data. The holidays can bring added stress to their already full plates, but Martin Hernandez with AARP Wisconsin says times like these are when important discussions should happen.
This is an opportunity to come together with family and friends and have those open and frank conversations that people should be having about caregiving, both in the situation they might be currently, but then also planning for the future.
It's estimated caregivers spend on average about $7,000 a year on related out-of-pocket expenses. He says AARP Wisconsin will ask state legislators to once again consider a tax credit for family caregivers of up to $500 in the next session. A bill in Congress for a larger federal tax credit for caregivers has sat in a U.S. House subcommittee for almost a year. Expanding the state's family medical leave law to include up to 14 weeks of paid leave is also needed, Hernandez says. Proponents also hope the state will prioritize the needs of caregivers and the state's aging population as they develop the next state budget, which could include adopting the Medicaid expansion. Wisconsin is one of 10 states that has not yet expanded its Medicaid program, which would extend eligibility to about 91,000 more residents. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, a sprinkle or two, otherwise partly cloudy, a low near 30. Windy for Monday, partly sunny, highs near 40 degrees. Monday night, mostly cloudy and breezy with a low of 19. On Tuesday, mostly cloudy, highs near 23. Wednesday, chance of snow with temps falling.
Right now, it's 41.
Earl Ingram.
Join me on the next show. It's Motown Monday. We'll catch up on the news from the weekend and talk about the politricksters of the day.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into this week's Spotlight. Up first, we're going to hear from the Earl Ingram Show. Earl was joined this week by Wisconsin's own Ben Wickler to discuss his bid for the chairman of the National Democratic Party and the reasons he believes the Democrats did not see the results they wanted in the November election.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, and as promised, none other than Mr. Ben Wickler, who is running for the DNC chair. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so good, Earl. I'm really glad to be with you today, and I'm really excited about the chance to take the kind of year-round organizing we've been building in Wisconsin to the national level and fight back against this extreme disaster of an administration that's going to be starting in a couple months.
I got a couple of questions I want to ask you. One of the reasons you are running is because you believe the Democrats need to unite. You want to elaborate on that, sir?
Absolutely. You know, after elections, especially elections that don't go our way, and this was, it's really painful to have Trump the victor in this national election and control the whole federal government, it is easy for Democrats to fall into the trap of everyone blaming each other. Sometimes that's factions of progressives versus moderates. Sometimes that's the blame game across race or ethnicity, and people trying to pit different groups of Democrats and different groups of voters against each other. And sometimes it's everyone against everyone. And people, I think it's important to reckon with what the data tells us, what voters are telling us about how they've decided to vote in this election. But what we don't need is recriminations. What we need is a shared analysis of what went wrong and how to win in the years to come, because it is urgent that we do. And the number one thing that stands out to me is voters across race, ethnicity, gender in rural areas and suburbs and cities alike, the voters that moved the most towards Trump or away from Democrats this time were often the people who felt most frustrated and angry about explosive prices and the lack of support after the COVID pandemic measures went away. Now in Wisconsin, We turned out more voters for Harris than we did for Biden. We turned out a ton of people. There were some people who came out of the woodwork and voted for Trump, and so he got even more votes. But Harris earned a phenomenal level of support across our state. And I think that speaks to the strength of our unity and our ability to communicate and the work to be done. But this isn't horseshoes. Getting close doesn't get you to a victory. I think what we need is to figure out even more effectively how to reach out and demonstrate through our actions that we're fighting for everyone, for working people, no matter what they look like, no matter where they live, that this is the party that believes that working people should have a shot in this economy and that we should all have freedom, dignity, the respect that every person deserves.
So as a 70-year-old black man who's lived through 11 different presidential elections, I have to tell you, sir, I'm frustrated to hear the Democrats say, well, we lost because we didn't listen to people who live in rural America and who struggle economically. And so the Democrats didn't listen to them. And now we've got to move more towards, you know, doing what the Republicans say they're going to do.
I completely agree with you. And I will add to that, that it's Sinema and Manchin and every single Republican who right. opposed taking action on this. Every single Republican, almost every Democrat, supported taking action to lift people up, to help people afford childcare, to be able to afford housing, to be able to make sure this economy works for working people. And every Republican opposed it. And they, you know, they run all these ads attacking all kinds of different groups of people. But when they get power, what do? They hand trillions of dollars to billionaires, and then they stick working people with the bill. And that is black and Latino people and white people in rural areas and cities and suburbs alike. If you're not making $100 million a year, you're probably going to wind up paying for the tax cuts for the people that are making hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. And that's what's so frustrating about this kind of election, because the Republicans do not run on what they actually are going to do when they have power. And that's why, to me, for Democrats, we can be proud of our values. They're actually deeply shared values in this country. The idea of freedom is the most fundamental American idea. It's one that we've never achieved for everybody, but it's one that we have to keep fighting for. It's what makes us who we are. And the idea of an economy that actually works for working folks, that is what Democrats at their best have always fought for. Republicans are trying to claim that they're the party of the regular person and Democrats are the party of the elite. But look who Trump is appointing to his cabinet. Look who he's surrounding himself with, and look at what he actually does in office. Last time, he did two big things. He gave a multi-trillion dollar tax cut to the richest people in this country, and he appointed Supreme Court justices who have ripped away freedoms from the majority of Americans at this point. And that is their agenda. They're going to try to do the same thing now, and I think we will show who we are and who we're for by the way that we fight back.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mr. Ben Wickler. He is running for the national DNC chair. So, sir, how do you propose to unite the Democratic Party?
I think that the first piece is to do this kind of analysis where we actually dig in and understand what happened. And I think that if we can do that with curiosity and with grace, that can help us to point the way forward. One thing that strikes me that we're already seeing from the data is that the people who did not see Harris's message were the ones who were most likely to vote against her. The more she campaigned, the more people supported her. And she did better in the places where she campaigned the most. And we did worst in the places where we campaigned the least. So that says that there was something about the message and our candidate that was working. And I think a lot of people are, if you're just watching the news or scrolling around online, a lot of people have that backwards. So learn what actually happened. And then it is going to be the fights that define us. And to me, this starts with fights that are going to have long-term consequences for our states and our country. So I'll put a big circle around one. The state Supreme Court race this spring, Susan Crawford versus Brad Schimmel in the state of Wisconsin. It's the first big election of the new Trump era. And Brad Schimmel, he helped to create the attacks against, his solicitor general, when he was attorney general in Wisconsin, helped create the plan that led to the fall of Roe versus Wade. He is as anti-union and anti-worker as it gets. He's a right-wing extremist. And he wants to be on Wisconsin's highest court. If he gets there, you know they're going to rig our legislative maps to ensure Republicans always win again. If we fight in these down ballot races, we've seen the impact in Wisconsin in the state legislature of having fair maps. Republicans took over the Supreme Court in North Carolina, gerrymandered that state, threw a bunch of Democrats out of Congress, and that is why we have a right-wing majority in the U.S. House right now, because of Republicans winning in state elections. So to me, The fights like Wisconsin Supreme Court race, which all of us in Wisconsin have to work on, the national party should be looking at and partnering with states across the country to fight in those races that wind up determining whether our country is rigged for the most powerful and wealthy people at the top or whether it actually works for everyone. That is My experience is people come together when there's a shared purpose based on shared values. And so uniting the party means drawing a spotlight on big fights that bring us together. I'll give another example, the fight against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act in 2017. There were a million things going on in that moment, but we came together as a country and rose up against this attempt to rip away healthcare from tens of millions of people, and we won. And that became the biggest issue in 2018 in the midterm elections. There will be fights like that. And if we're working in every state at every level and drawing a spotlight to the big battles for our core values that bring us all together as a movement, then I think we're going to be able to unite and fight and win. And that's my platform, unite, fight, win.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mr. Ben Wickler. He is running for the national DNC chair. Sir, I will ask you, well, this is a question. I've seen that the fund, this is a text question, Tony. I've seen that the fundamental problem was the Democratic brand. Do you think that is the case more than the Harris campaign?
I think that's a fair question. And I think that the core answer is yes. And when I say that, what I mean is the Democratic brand is what people think of when they think of Democrats. It's not what we necessarily do or say. It's what people have heard and internalized. And there are millions of people across this country who mostly learn about Democrats from Republicans. What they see is the right-wing attacks that try to make Democrats look completely out of touch with what people are struggling with in their own lives. And that to me is an argument for thinking about how and where we communicate, showing through our actions, and also making sure we are present. We are present on the radio and online, that we're present in places where people are, you know, thinking about stuff other than politics. Because the people who tuned in and heard Harris, they were more likely to vote for her. And if people actually knew accurately what she wanted to do and what Trump wanted to do, she won those voters by overwhelming margins. That is not centrally a candidate problem. That is a problem that is a much bigger picture problem about a world where right-wing propagandists have tried to distort what Democrats are actually about.
So I want to...
Yeah.
I'm going to squeeze in one more question before we have to go. And that is, this was a razor close race. And so many of us who voted Democrat don't want to see Democrats totally do away with the things that they stood for. This is a message that I think all Democrats should hear, especially those who are saying, we need to change the trajectory of what Democrats stand for. Those of us who have voted Democrat forever, we don't want to see you completely, dismantle the things that Democrats have stood for.
Listen, we're in complete agreement about this. And I also believe that when people hear and understand what Democrats have stood for and are fighting for, Democrats win. If you ask people, do you want a party that believes that all of us, no matter the color of our skin or how we pray or whether we pray, no matter where we live, that all of us deserve freedom and dignity and respect, that everyone deserves a chance to be able to support their family and have a job that actually pays a living wage, those things are overwhelmingly popular. It's the Republican propaganda that says Democrats don't care about you, that they're thinking about someone different than you. They want to take something from you to give it to someone else. That's the divide and conquer strategy that Republicans use. And in this election, it worked. But I will say something. In this election, everywhere in the world, every government that was in power lost ground in this election. And we haven't had inflation like we've had in these last years since the pandemic for a long time. So, I grew up in an era of low inflation. I hadn't fully internalized for myself, but inflation, it makes everyone want to just change the channel to get a different administration. And unless you were tuning into what Harris was saying and what Democrats were saying in this election, you might think that Trump would bring prices down. Well, his plan is to bring prices up. Democrats, Harris had a plan to bring prices
down. It's unfortunate that we're out of time. Promise me you'll be back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. That's Mr. Ben Wickler.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
It's the center of the Kringle-making world. Racine County wears the crown, and bakers like those at O&H create more than 10,000 of the delicate oval-shaped pastry every single day.
Just a great pastry. One that's hard to make, though, hard to replicate.
Peter Olesen is a third-generation owner. O&H is celebrating its 75th year, but do you know if Wisconsin considers the Kringle our official pastry? The answer coming up.
The 500-square-foot corner bakery to offering our products by mail.
Baker Mike Massanella says their Kringle is shipped near and far. The tradition began when the Danes came to Racine in the late 1800s, and it is that past and present which created our official state pastry, the Kringle, in 2013. And it's a you can't have just one slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on The Spotlight, we'll dive into Act 10, the signature law of Governor Scott Walker that was overturned this week. We go now to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow and the conversation he had with Duff Martin, an Eau Claire area teacher, on the executive board of the National Education Association.
Do you want to dance and hold my hand? Tell me, baby, I'm your loving man. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Do you want to
That dance? Is one of the few Beach Boys songs where Dennis Wilson was the lead singer, the Beach Boys drummer, who was born this day in 1944, passed away in 1983. Reminder that if you're watching us on social media, Facebook or YouTube, and you want to give us a question or a comment, just head to the comment section. We see it there, and we may put it up on screen and respond to it as well anytime throughout the show. In this part of the show, we're going to be talking to Duff Martin from Eau Claire. He's an Eau Claire teacher on leave right now as he works with the National Education Association. He's on the executive committee, which keeps him plenty busy advocating for education and for educators. Not the least of which is reacting to the news that Act 10 was more or less overturned by a Dane County judge this week. Ron Duff Martin, how are you? And where are you? You're in Rhode Island, you said, this week.
Yes, doing very well. Thank you, Pat. Yes, in Rhode Island for the National Council of Urban Education Associations. So our largest locals in the union for NEA are gathering to do some training and to do some socializing and some growing.
So you heard the ruling, you heard about the ruling from the judge in Dane County and the legal basis for overturning and not the judge saying, look, this thing is so intertwined in such a way, you basically have to throw out the entire law. You can't, like, keep, you know, parts of it. It just doesn't work that way. And we talked yesterday about basically the sham premise that the whole law is based on. But when you heard all of this, I'm curious as to your first reaction.
Well, you know, at first I was very excited, obviously. This is a long, long overdue ruling, but I was very excited about it and the fact that somebody finally recognized that the law really was meant to, you know, try to take down the union and the power the union had in electing pro-public education candidates. And so it's long overdue, Pat, and I was very excited. I know we have still an uphill battle with this, but we're in it to win it. And we've worked hard for the last, I don't know how many, you know, how many years it's been.
You know, 13 years and how many tens of thousands of people who marched at the state capitol, yeah, who recognized the unfairness of it from the get-go. And look, I know sometimes the wheels of justice turn slowly, but it really tells you the kind of hurdles that you faced, that it took this long for a court in some way, shape, or form to see, you know, the unconstitutionality of the law. Now, obviously, there's going to be, you know, appeals ahead. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has promised it. Of course, Scott Walker had to put his 2 cents in. So things are far from a done deal, but where do you see the potential for this in the long run if things continue to go well?
Well, I think there's a lot of potential for possibilities with this. I think one of the areas that many of our rural school districts are experiencing are teacher shortages. And I think once we reinstate some of the aspects of collective bargaining that protect employees from wage discrimination, but also allows for individuals to see a future in education. They see the opportunity to be able to move up in a salary schedule that don't exist in some school districts, opportunities for other things that make the job appealing to individuals. I think we're going to see some of those hard to fill positions become filled. I think also we're going to see people happier in the profession. When you have a voice at the table, when you have the opportunity to give input, you know, it just makes the workplace a much more exciting place to be at. As far as the uphill battle, yes, it is going to be an uphill battle, but, you know, I think we have a lot of things on our side, and we've worked real hard to get to this point. It just didn't happen overnight. It was very strategic. We knew we weren't going to legislate Act 10 back or out of there and get collective bargaining back. We knew we had to litigate it, and that was our avenue. But litigating it meant we also had to make sure that we had a Supreme Court that was not going to be bought and paid for by the other side, that it would be a Supreme Court that would listen and really actually apply, you know, the Constitution and the rule of law, et cetera. So it was a long, long, hard-fought battle. So we've got a lot more work to do, but excited about it.
Oh, yeah. It is a refreshing change that the Wisconsin Supreme Court is no longer a subsidiary of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, at least until April 1st, which I imagine, given that education allies have been plenty active already in trying to change the political landscape out there, I imagine that enthusiasm level, believe it or not, is going to be ramped up even higher as a result of this decision when you look at how pivotal that April 1st Supreme Court race is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think on both sides, Pat, to be honest with you, I think that those on the Republican side, particularly Robin Voss and others, you know, they're going to look at this is their way to be able to curtail some of the things that have been happening, particularly the redrawing of maps. I mean, that was this Supreme Court. Again, I think they're going to invest a lot. They're going to put a lot. This is going to be a very expensive Supreme Court race. It's going to be a very tough one. But like I said, we're in it to win it, and we're just not going to back down. This is too important to us.
And then I just want to come back briefly on the point that you made. What really changes here is that Act 10 limited negotiating pretty much to wages, which of course were capped at the inflation rate, so there really wasn't much to negotiate. There's all this flexibility now with what I guess the shorthand version would be working conditions, but that kind of flexibility is where you think there can be some real strength in fixing what is ailing some of education in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, in all my years as a local president in Eau Claire and having the opportunity to be a part of the bargaining team and do bargaining in the Eau Claire Area School District, you know, never in all my years as a union leader did we ever want to bankrupt the district. That really, I mean, we had the mediation arbitration law in there. That took care of all the wage part of it. It was some of those other pieces, the language pieces, that really really were important to our members, the number of sick days we get, et cetera. You know, all that kind of stuff is incredibly important to the working conditions for our employees. It's a tough 9 months when you're a teacher. And so being able to have the kind of working conditions that help our educators is critically important.
It is a level of respect that has been long overdue, dating back to the Scott Walker years, that we see finally slowly being restored in Wisconsin. Duff Martin, it is always great to talk to you. Safe travels, and we'll continue to follow matters, especially between now and April, but all the time with you as an education advocate. Thanks, Duff, for the time.
Yep. Thanks, Pat. Good to see you.
You bet. When we come back, we'll talk to folks in the Hudson School District about the fork in the road faced after a referendum last month. That's on Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
CBS News special report deposed Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad has fled to Moscow and has received asylum by longtime ally Russia. Speaking from the White House, President Biden called Syria's political upheaval an opportunity for the people there to rebuild their country.
It's a moment of historic opportunity for the long-suffering people of Syria to build a better future for their proud country. It's also a moment of risk and uncertainty.
BBC News correspondent Barbara Plett-Usher is in Damascus.
I was speaking to one man, and I asked him about Bashar al-Assad, and he said, I have to even still think twice before I feel safe enough to say his name. That's how afraid we've all been of the regime.
It's the end of the half-century rule from the Assad family.
Bashar al-Assad was not interested in talking about any transition of power whatsoever, and he has now paid the price.
That's the BBC's Frank Gardner. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Toscano.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Mike Clemens with Civic Media Sports. Marquette defeated Wisconsin yesterday 88-74 in a matchup of ranked teams. It was the fifth time in history both schools were ranked when they played each other. The Badgers led by 2 at halftime, but 9 second-half turnovers forced by the Golden Eagles led to a big comeback. Marquette head coach Shaka Smart got his first win over the Badgers in 4 tries.
It's a terrific game and awesome atmosphere. Really grateful for our fans. The way they lit up Fiserv today. This is what college basketball is all about. I'm really grateful for the fact that there's two great college basketball programs in this state and that we get to play every year.
Four Marquette players scored in double figures, and the Golden Eagles shot 50% in the win. Next up for 8-2 Wisconsin is number 19 Illinois on Tuesday. Marquette will face Dayton a week from Saturday. The Milwaukee Bucks will play this evening against the Brooklyn Nets. The Bucks are coming off of back-to-back losses. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska for Civic Media Sports.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, a sprinkle or two, otherwise partly cloudy, a low near 30. Windy for Monday, partly sunny, highs near 40 degrees. Monday night, mostly cloudy and breezy with a low of 19. On Tuesday, mostly cloudy, highs near 23. Wednesday, chance of snow with temps falling.
Right now, 40 degrees.
We visited Alexandria, Minnesota a few summers ago. Great time, lakes, fishing, all that. But this year, for the holidays, we wanted a winter vacation that was just as memorable, just as family friendly, but with lights and snow, and this time, with our grandkids in tow. This holiday, it's Alexandria again. We're coming back to make new memories.
Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We know what happened the last time Trump applied this ham-fisted tariff policy. He had to write a $12 billion check to farmers because he crushed so many of our agricultural exports and drove up the cost of single-family homes because the cost of lumber from places like Canada went way the frick up. Everything got more expensive.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, said he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, he is featured in an article in the Cap Times, and he's the host of Nightlight. Across Civic Media, Pete Schwabba will be joining us. And of course, this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air. Weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear from Matinair on air. And this week, Jane and Greg welcomed in Emily Cephos, former candidate for the Assembly and volunteer at the county level for the Democratic Party. She discusses what Democrats need to do differently in upcoming elections and how to build support at the county level.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Kelby coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, we will wrap up the show today at 11:51, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the olfactory edition. You're going to want to stick around for that. It might not be exactly what you think.
It's never, Jane, what
it's
you
never,
think.
It's never what you think.
It's always the opposite of what you think and or want.
Very excited to have our next guest join us. I stumbled on you on Twitter after the election. Emily Cephos is here. She's a former Assembly candidate and a county party volunteer in the Fox Valley area. And Emily, you had this great thread about going forward and how Democrats can move forward after November 5th. And so where would you like to start? What do you think? Because you've knocked on a lot of doors.
I have. Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I think that, you know, I put up something after I took a little bit of time to process what I did well, what I maybe reflected that I could have done better at myself, and also being as close as I am to the Democratic Party as a whole. Really, I understand how that whole ecosystem works during an electoral cycle. And I also see just this untapped potential that exists with neighbors that we've never talked to before, but also strategy that Dems, I think, can employ to further our cause so that we're not starting at square one every single cycle. We need to focus on the building. And that's really what that was all about and where I want to see the party going.
Well, and I think there's been a lot of discussion, obviously, about Ben Wickler and what Ben Wickler has done since he kind of took things over here in Wisconsin. And now he's obviously throwing his hat in nationally. But it does seem like we do a great ground game 3 months leading up to the election, and I'm not sure what's going on the rest of the time, right?
Yeah. And the ground game is unmatched. And Ben has been incredible when it comes to fundraising and when it comes to, you know, deploying all of us across the state. But I think there are some things during those electoral cycles that we can do a little bit better. I think that we count out too many people when it comes to, you know, going a little bit further into the red, talking to our neighbors about issues and doing it in a way that resonates with them because it's local and it's right outside their front door. So I think that we need to acknowledge where we are as a nation when it comes to our politics, in that we are being told to mistrust one another. And so in order to start building, we need to see the value and the worth in hitting every single door we can within a certain
certain parameters. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to go in but I've walked up to doors that had big Trump signs on it. And I said, it looks like you've got your mind made up at the top, but I'm here to talk about your most local representation. So you can still salvage tickets in those situations. And that's what I'm talking about, that building where it's like, if I show up and I do a good job for you, and I hope to, then next time you'll extend that upward. And we have to be thinking long-term about what we can do again to make sure we're not starting at the same starting point every electoral cycle. And then in the interim, I think that a priority needs to be given to our county parties. We're the people that are, you know, we live, work, and play here.
Yep.
And so we know our communities well. We know what issues people are talking about. We know who's struggling and who's not. We're going to the supper clubs and churches and Friday night football games. Help us to empower our local people to have that drumbeat continue throughout the whole cycle. And so we can, again, be building that trust and relationship, and we'll see results in subsequent elections.
I know that one of the things that we would always talk about individuals who are knocking on the doors, especially in this past election, is, you know, who are you talking to? What are you talking about? What are the things that unite us rather than divide us? And one thing that they always said was exactly what you said, Emily, is that they would either, you know, come across people or go to doors of individuals who clearly look like they were not supporting them. And they would find out like, oh, well, the sign is my husband or my wife. I'm voting this way, or I don't really care. Or they just think, well, I'm going to vote for this person. Therefore, I'm obviously not going to vote for this person because they're not the party I like or know. And then they have a conversation and you find out that not only are they enlightened by the discussion, but also they're not used to, especially in Wisconsin and gerrymandered maps, they're not used to politicians having to really work hard to keep those seats.
Yeah.
So this outpouring of attention, it shows up and people, like, you see it on their face and be like, oh, I've never had anyone talk to me before. It's okay. Here's what's going on in my life, you know, and that leaves a lasting mark.
Right. Right. And I think, like, I've been on doors, like, this district is in the Fox Valley area, but it went out to like New London, like very far out of town. And I went to doors where they're like, I have, you know, like never had anyone knock on my door before. And so whether or not they were big fans of the Democratic Party, and I always led with like myself, cause I'm right there. Right. Like to say to a person, like, what are you concerned about? And they might be concerned about their public schools, like knowing that they've got a leaky roof in Freedom, for example, and to say, well, like our schools have been underfunded. Right. So that's something that at the state level we can change. And then also, since you just told me that public schools are really important to you, they want to do away with the Department of Ed. Right. And so you bring them in at the ground level and then you, you know, bring them up in an elevator. I always say, like, where it's like we enter here where it's right outside your door, because those are things that we mostly agree upon. And then it's twisted somewhere along the way. But then you extend that upward. And maybe, like, there were people that reached out to me after the fifth that were like Republicans and independents and libertarians. And they were like, just so you know, I held up my end of the bargain. Like, I split that ticket for you. And those are like where I'm like, we build on that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we want next time then to go back to Joe or Tom or whoever it is and say, hey, we talked to you last time, same goals. Like, I want you to put that trust in me again, and we'll continue to make inroads.
Well, and I do think that certainly this election cycle where we saw the Democrats take some seats that had been held for a long time by Republicans, now that we have fairer maps, they may have gone ahead, as you said, Emily, and voted for Trump at the top of the ticket. But obviously those conversations made a difference in some areas of Wisconsin. So you had mentioned that you would like to see the county parties be given a little more, is it autonomy or is it just funding, or what steps would you like to see to happen?
I think like the autonomy piece is huge. I think extending a little bit of trust to us at the grassroots level to say, we know our community's best. Here's what everybody's talking about. And then tailoring a message that is very local, very right outside their door. Again, like, I think that the electorate typically isn't super involved when it comes to understanding policy.
Right.
And so you can't go there and debate, you know, what tariffs will actually do to your grocery prices necessarily, but you can like start at the local level, be like, yeah, I get it. It's really hard to make ends meet, and then tailor that message so that it does, it connects it eventually for them, but it starts at a local level. Because I always think about like to go to doors and like, sometimes, you know, like you're told, and of course, like there are people, you know, we all kind of ad lib at certain points, but if we're told to lead with the top of the ticket as a Democrat at a person's door who doesn't typically align with the Democratic Party, the door is shut in your face right away.
Absolutely.
But if you start at the bottom and you're like, let's talk about the things that we can find in common here, then they're like, oh, I did not see myself in that. But you respectfully having a conversation to like widen that lens a little bit, like allowed me a moment to reconsider maybe what I was doing. And again, it's like, it's building for the long term. And I think like what I want to see is that we don't discount the slow and steady smaller successes that we need to see if we want to build back. Like I think that the goal for the party should obviously be like, we got a 20-year plan, and in 20 years this is not a battleground state, this is solidly blue. How and then work back, how are we going to organize to make that reality for us? And that's like what at least at the county party level, kind of the frustration with like the whole X threat or whatever, is that I don't hear that happening. And I'm like, I'm one of your most dedicated volunteers. But if we on the ground are not the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, then who is? You know, like if we don't have a say and we're not collaborative about it, then who is?
I think that's another thing, Emily, you brought up. I think it's a good point to make, too, is that we, you know, whether if you are a liberal or a Democrat or are on the left, it's easy to think like, oh, if they have a Trump sign, they're going to shut the door in my face. Democrats have a problem with not agreeing with each other quietly.
That never happens.
And this whole notion now of this whole notion of like, you know, it's the day after the election, Kamala has lost. We need to burn everything to the ground. Yeah. I think that's right. Counterproductive as well. But I think important right here is the discussion about the counties. And I think I used to be a member of a county Democratic Party here in Racine. And I think my biggest gripe, and if they're listening, sorry, but my biggest gripe is the recruitment of younger people into the party with a vision that can take us into the future. Because when you watched the DNC, you saw young people in control making that a very fun, energetic, alive event. And you need to have, as you said, too, a goal to say like, all right, let's say you want to run someone against Robin Voss. You can't just say, all right, in 2 years, we're going to run you. We're going to say, Emily, we're going to run you in 6 years, but this is what we're going to do over 6 years, and we're going to make you known. It can't just be like, oh, it's 6 months into the election. Emily, do you want to run?
You busy?
We need someone.
Yeah, just drop you in there. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. You need to have that plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's such a lack of vision sometimes in some of those parties, and I understand. I get why, but it's also then hard to knock on the doors of power within those parties and say, I have an idea, because some people really love their power. And you just have to wait it out.
Well, and that's unfortunate, right? Because we all want to demonize the other side, yeah. Right? But I think there are some people who have been in power in a long time in the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer, and who could. It's time to pass the torch. It's time to bring in some younger blood. It's time, as you said, Emily, to start planning for 20 years down the road when Chuck Schumer and those guys are going to be gone.
And you think about the way that the Republicans have done it too. Like, we're living through the culmination of decades of planning. Like,
yes.
This is not something that is just like, oh, it just happened. No, this is something that they had that vision and we're behind on it. To my knowledge, like, I don't feel connected to it. So what we're doing like locally, because the wheels of big machines turn slowly, is that locally we're like, what can we do? But it is like, to, you know, Greg, your point that, like, I have organizing background. So I'm like, okay, like, if this doesn't exist in the system level, like, I will help to build it, and it might not be perfect, but we're going to work toward it.
Yeah.
But like, there are people that are good people that are like, well, I'm just used to like the door knocking, and I'm used to the electoral, like 3 months before stuff, and they need to be like trained up. And that's why I just want to see like the party as a whole acknowledging that, or like actual organizing and building in the in-between is what we need to be doing right now. You know, so it brings more people in, and it makes those inroads so somebody can run and beat Robin Voss eventually someday.
I know. Wishful.
A boy can dream.
If you're just joining us, Emily Sefos is our guest. She's a former assembly candidate and a county party volunteer in the Fox Valley. I want to back up just a little bit, Emily, to something that you said, and I don't know this to be true, but I can see this happening, where the National Democratic Party comes to the little local county parties and says, this is the messaging we want you to take out to the doors. That's a huge mistake. As you said, it's, you know what's going on the ground with your neighbors at your schools and your churches and the bars and whatever, and you can't be expected to all go out with the same messaging. It's not going to work.
No, we're not like little drones, and it's just like the same messaging to the same people over and over, which is like another, you know, reflection of mine where I'm like, why are we discrediting and discounting these, you know, these rural areas or these more suburban areas and going to the same doors like 3 or 4 times with like the same message again and again and again? Are we really, is that really the most effective use of our people?
I think it's interesting because we have people, especially farmers, on here talking about how all policy affects them, but specifically how the upcoming Trump policies will affect them, and as they did in 2016. But you have one side that cannot say boo about their leadership, and you have another side that's like, well, maybe we should bring in a little more nuanced discussion about our differences, when really, when it comes down to it, the people at the bar, one guy may have voted for Kamala, one woman may have voted for Trump, but they have existing qualities that are alike, and they can talk it out.
Yep.
And we don't give them enough credit to do so.
Yeah, exactly. And if we don't show up, then there is only, you know, like, then it is as it's always been.
Right.
And so why?
Right. Well, then you're just ceding the territory, as I think you said in your thread on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you can't discount them. So
no, we're going to continue our conversation with Emily Sefos. If you would like to join us, 855 855- 752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Putz de Leon continues to actively ruin. We will be back in just a moment. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. The race for that role now has a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is now officially running for DNC chair. One Democratic source I talked to characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the role. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big-dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 1st. A lot can happen between now and then. But whether or not Wickler wins in his bid for the role, it will certainly be a story to watch for Democratic politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of the Civic Media Spotlight, we return to the topic of Act 10. Maggie Dawn of The Maggie Dawn Show is an attorney as well as a talk show host. She gives her take on the law which stripped public employees of their collective bargaining rights.
Nobody does talk radio like Civic Media. So glad y'all are here. We got Cardi behind the board. Give us a call. Everybody's wanted to talk about Act 10, the Act 10 decision. Unions, what is collective bargaining? Why does it matter? Can we have discussions about where unions might fall a little short? Because I think these are actually really complicated, fascinating issues. Let's continue to talk about this. Y'all have had a ton of comments. I know, Mark, you were on the horn. I think we had somebody else. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I never want to shut it down when we are having one of our patented great conversations. So please, let's reengage. This is something that, again, I have had a front row seat to, which is the impact of Act 10. Both as a frontline employee, I was in the municipal lawyers union at the city of Milwaukee when I first joined because I was just a frontline staffer. I eventually ended up running the city of Milwaukee's 401k styled plan and putting in some major changes there. And employees didn't trust us because they had just watched their paychecks get cut effectively by somewhere. Sometimes over 10%, depending, based on Act 10. Lots of distrust, and I ended up in management at Milwaukee County. So I've seen this from all sides. And at Milwaukee County, as a manager, as the leader of our law department, I worked with HR in negotiating with our public safety unions. I know what that looks like. I know what the process feels like. I know where the pitfalls are. I know how the lawyers act that represent unions. So I am here for all of your comments and discussions. This is one of those where I think like the party lines, both from conservatives and from liberals on this, don't quite get it done. Okay. And so in full disclosure, I'm going to try to take every single call and every single text I'm going to give some voice to so that we can actually have this discussion. I think it's an incredibly important one. And I'm going to just start right out of the box by giving you what my take is on, I'm going to keep it narrow to public sector unions, but some of the commentary can extend into private sector unions. Here's the fundamental point for me. I have always thought that Act 10 is unconstitutional. When you strip away frontline employees' rights to get together and fight for better working conditions, better pay, and higher benefits, that is a violation of our constitutionally protected right to assemble. That's what that is about. If you want to talk about being a Christian, well, one of the best known Christians out there, or groups of Christians, is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church for centuries has talked about the dignity and necessity for the full expression of human dignity to be able to organize as labor. Okay? That is fundamental. I will always support the right of workers to organize. Here's where it gets a little complicated. I want unions to actually represent all of their membership. I want unions to be aware of how politically labor is being represented. And by that, I mean not who is their elected representatives, but does the labor union or the union movement continue to have, or does it need to regrow, the faith of the general public, as well as its youngest union membership? My experience has been that unions are really great at advocating for their very senior and top level employees. I wonder why that is. But they don't do so well advocating for and advancing their interests of their most junior employees. I also think that compensation that is only tenure-based is problematic. Should tenure be a part of compensation decisions? You bet. But should compensation and bonuses also be based on effectiveness, efficiency, attitude, all those kinds of things? Yes. Unions have not traditionally been really good at talking about that, right? These are the sorts of things that provide attack opportunities for those that want to degrade the ability of working people to organize, which is fundamentally anti-American and anti-democratic small d. Let's see here. Andrew from Maine, side note, not Act 10. Oh, he loves my t-shirt today. It's such a simple, obvious message. Yes, my t-shirt, if you are not watching on the U of the Tube or the X or the face of the books, says trust democratic women. I am a democratic woman. I hope you trust me. Thank you, Andrew. Wes from Middleton says, per the Walker Voss School of Thought, Dr. Ben and those out in the streets answering the crisis lines that work for governments, connecting people to resources are not public safety. I'm excited to see them attempt to explain that in court. This is one of the issues with Act 10. When you think about public safety employees, conservation wardens carry guns. All kinds of folks carry guns and enforce laws, but they weren't included in the definition of public safety. And by the way, at the end of the day, what do all governmental employees try to do? Increase public health, safety, and wellness. So why isn't it all public safety? In other words, who got to bargain about what could not be rationally explained? And by the way, one of the biggest rationales could have been cost savings, but they couldn't make that argument because the largest drivers of costs, especially in the city of Milwaukee, were police and fire benefits and pensions. So they could never say that. That's why when they go, oh, it's about the cost savings now, is a bunch of hooey, okay? That is just bogus. It was raw political calculation. Let me keep going down the text line. Dave from Waukesha. It's hard to want to carry the torch of advocacy post-election. Even before the election, it felt like wind was knocked out of my sails. I stopped listening to talk radio for a while because of how I was feeling. I worked hard as an advocate against MAGA school board, BS, and Waukesha for the last few years, and the LGBTQ hate parade. Now I feel somewhat rudderless, like it's all for naught. Wondering if there is a segment of folks out there who are feeling the same. I do sometimes too, Dave, but I will say this. The very fact that we're having this discussion about Act 10, that there is this lawsuit that's going on, get involved in your local and state government. Pay attention to these elections because these matter a whole lot. We may not be able to do much on the federal level for the next 4 years, though keep an eye on the House of Representatives, right? Like, holy cow, keep an eye there. That might be a 1 or 2 seat margin, so it's not going to take much. but local and state government, especially that Supreme Court election in April, keeping me motivated. We're going to come back, finish this discussion up, y'all. I'm going to go to the phones and back to the text lines next. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, y'all. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media, this is 93.5 The Tap. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Dr. Kristen Lierley, who will address all our health needs to make us more efficient TV watchers. Then Nightlight will really go up in smoke when I welcome Rose Bauman from Legacy Cigars.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Ho-ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win starting Monday morning. Ho-ho-ho!
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.